KOWO Radio 104.1 FM would like to welcome you to Windows into Wimberley. Each week, Erica Clapp is joined by a guest to discuss the things that are happening in and around your town. These conversations are designed to provide the community with insight and information on a wide range of topics that are specific to the Wimberley area. Now it's time to look through the windows into Wimberley.
Thank you for joining me on this week's episode. I'm your host, Erica Clapp, and today my guest is Melissa Rodriguez of the Hayes and Caldwell County Women's Center, also known as the HCWC, and she is the Director of Community Partnerships. Thank you for joining me today, Melissa.
Thanks for having me.
Actually, I should say thank you for returning. I spoke with you back in October of last year.
That's right.
During, I believe it's Domestic Violence Awareness Month?
That's right. October is Domestic Violence Awareness
Month. During that time, you guys had some stuff going. How did that pan out for you guys?
It was great. All our awareness months, so because we cover a broad area of victim issues, we have three different awareness months covering four different issues. And October is probably our biggest initiative. So we had a lot of things going on. We had our Dining for Change program, which we'll do again this year. We have local restaurants that participate and feature domestic violence issues for that day and then donate a portion of proceeds of their sales. And then we also have our football program initiative that we do with area high schools, where we have football teams that also feature domestic violence at a football game. And it's a way to engage with youth in our efforts in preventing future domestic violence. It's been going on probably about 5 or 6 years. We'll again do this year. And then we have different local community events. We've got a lot of community support. So every year we have additional folks coming out saying, hey, I want to do this for you. Can we partner up? One of our longstanding events as well is our domestic violence awareness walk that we do in Lockhart. We serve both Hayes and Caldwell counties, so we're trying to cover that entire area and providing those kind of resources and opportunities for the community.
So you mentioned that there's two other months that you do this. What months are those, and what do you advocate for during those times?
Yeah. So February is Dating Violence Awareness Month. A few years ago, we added dating violence to our mission statement, just as an acknowledgement that we've been working with that population always. But it often gets pushed aside in a lot of ways because it's seen as not as serious. But dating violence can be just as dangerous and lethal for victims of abuse, sometimes more so, even though there's not a domestic connection. They're not living together usually sometimes, or married, or have children, but sometimes do, right? So the other thing about dating violence awareness that's important is it's also, we recognize that domestic violence doesn't just start after marriage and children. This is a pattern of behavior often that starts early in the dating phase. So often when young people are in middle school and high school, they're learning who they are and how they are going to engage in a relationship. And some of those bad patterns get set up pretty early. So it becomes something that continues and can escalate for some individuals, both on the perpetrator end and on the victim side. Dating violence awareness, one of the things that we did this year was partner with Whataburger. Our theme was, what about love? Orange is the color of dating violence awareness. So obviously orange and Whataburger.
Makes sense to me.
Absolutely. Effort, we had a lot of people come out that evening and support the work that we were doing. So we also do a lot of different things out in the community as well and in middle schools and high schools. So that's February. And then in April, it's two issues that we cover. Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which this year was bigger than we've ever done. And I think a lot of it is as a result of the Me Too movement. People are really talking about sexual assault issues and really wanting to connect with our organization to engage in the community and make a difference. So we had a variety of events. We had a candlelight vigil downtown in San Marcos. We had some restaurants that also donated and wanted materials to be posted. We went out to the university and partnered with them on their, they had a panel discussion and a film screening. So we did a lot of different things for Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And then the other one is Child Abuse Awareness Month, which is also equally as important to talk about the issues of child abuse in our communities and what resources are available to young people should they find themselves in that situation. But also to just talk about the pervasiveness of the problem, unfortunately. Both those areas that we serve are growing. Our numbers aren't slowing down, and the people that are coming out and needing assistance is something that we always want our community to be aware of. So those 2 months, sexual assault's teal is our color, and child abuse is blue, and our theme was listen, believe, and support, which we believe are really important for both any of our issues. It's important that people listen to what people are saying, their stories, to believe them, and of course, to support them. Those three things are so key in the healing process for survivors who are coming forward and seeking help.
With these awareness months. Mm-hmm. And those are all connected to the services that you provide. So let's talk about some of those services that you do provide.
Yeah.
Let's start with child abuse.
Yeah.
What do you do for those victims?
So in our child abuse program, it's in the community called Roxanne's House. That's how people know about it. And it's our local children's advocacy center. We serve both Hays and Caldwell counties, I mentioned before. And we're working with young people under the age of 17 who have experienced a form of child abuse. And most pervasively, the people that we're seeing are victims of child sexual abuse. So they're often being harmed by individuals that they know. It's not stranger danger. You know, we can probably count on one hand the number of stranger cases that we encounter in our child abuse program. Unfortunately, this issue of child sexual abuse is almost always the people that they know, love, and trust. So this could be a parent, it could be a grandparent, aunt or uncle, cousin, teacher, spiritual advisor, priest, Boy Scouts. I mean, it's very complicated with child sexual abuse. Often they don't tell right away when something has happened. There's a lot of blame and shame involved, even with children. And, you know, people in general think like, oh, if a child had something happen, surely they'd tell somebody because everyone knows that it's not a kid's fault. But that's just not true. They do feel really responsible for what happens to them. So they don't often tell until it's become bigger than they can handle, and it's showing in their behavior, or somebody finds out, maybe they let it slip, someone else tells for them, you know, those kind of things. So that's the primary population that we serve at Roxanne's House, in addition to providing services to victims of physical abuse and neglect, and also witnesses to violence. They might be witnesses to domestic violence or homicide or some other attempted murder, those kind of things. So we provide services for those kids in the form of forensic interviews, which is basically a trained professional who talks to children about allegations of abuse for the investigation and eventual prosecution if there is an investigation. And we also partner up with local law enforcement, child protective services, local prosecutor's office, CASA, which is court appointed special advocates. That's a huge component of our child advocacy centers, working in partnership with all of those entities.
Talk about a couple of some of the other services that you guys provide.
Yeah, so we also provide counseling, and I didn't mention in our child advocacy center, counseling is a big component of that for both the kids and the protective caregivers, and then advocacy service. So supporting them throughout that process, the criminal justice system is something most people don't know how to navigate. So that is something that our staff do, is educate and support throughout that entire process. So the same goes for our adult services. So we provide both non-residential and residential services. For the residential, that's in the form of our shelter, which is what most people know us as. They know us as a shelter. It was the very beginnings of our organizational history, was providing a family violence shelter, but since then we've grown and extended into these other areas. And our shelter, though most well known, is our smallest program, but our most expensive program. So we always tell people we serve the least amount of people in that, but it is certainly the most expensive because we're providing everything that one needs when they come in shelter. So for that program, it's individuals who are in need of safety and protection and crisis emergency need. So there's some violent event that's happened. They're not safe where they are, whether it's home or their partner's home or a family member's home, you know, whoever it is that has committed the abuse, and they're in need of safety and security. So that's a misperception in the community sometimes, that people need shelter because they have nowhere else to go because of affordability. Though that is a common denominator, it is not the sole factor. So people can afford to go into a hotel or stay with a family member or whatever the case may be, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the safest place for them. And we know if you search domestic violence homicides, that it's the most dangerous time for a victim is when they're leaving an abusive relationship or after they've left. That includes where they're going. So sometimes if they're staying somewhere else or working still, those homicides tend to happen there, at their place of work, at the family home or hotel where they're staying. So the emergency shelter is really key for security and safety. And we always want to educate people about that. It's not just about people who can't afford it. It's really about needing safety, right? So one of the things that we do there is legal advocacy. We help with protective orders, going with them to file charges if that's what they're choosing to do. They're adults. They can make that choice for themselves. We don't do that for them. We just give them resources and options and then help them through that process. So we have our legal advocate. We have our counselor who's on staff too to help process what's going on and the crisis that's just happened in their family. We have a children's counselor that also works with children when they come in shelter, because often they're confused about why they're there. I'm not at home anymore. What's going on? So they need a lot of therapeutic support as well. And we have a transportation advocate who also helps provide transportation if they need, they don't have a vehicle perhaps, and they need to get to and from appointments and their counseling offsite or whatever the case may be. Our advocate helps provide that transportation. And then our non-residential services is our largest serving program. That's where we serve the most individuals. And that's for adult victims of family violence or sexual assault, sometimes both. They're victims of both. And in that program, we're serving people with legal advocacy and personal advocacy and CPS advocacy, three different categories. Legal is same as the shelter, protective orders, divorce, custody agreements, that kind of thing. Personal advocates are working on things like needs help finding a new place to live or getting a job or accessing public assistance, that kind of thing. And then our CPS legal advocate is working with those families who are in the CPS system, which is really complicated and really requires a specialized trained professional to work with them through that process. So that is that person's responsibility in working with them. And then we have our counseling program. So of course, same, processing the crisis of what has happened in their family dynamic. Often victims come to us not even identifying as victims. They just pick up a phone and say, my mom said I should call you because things are not good in my relationship, but I don't really know what I don't identify as a victim because I've not been hit or whatever. And often when they come in and they learn about the broad spectrum of abuse, they have those aha moments like, oh, that is me. That did happen, or I do feel this way, or I do see this pattern. So we're helping them process through that trauma and hoping to empower them to make different choices so that they stay safe for themselves and if they have children, for their children. Our adult sexual assault program, that serves two different populations, one being adults molested as children. So these are folks who have experienced childhood sexual abuse and are struggling still with what's happened to them. Either they never told anyone, never got help, or even if they did as adults, they're still struggling because it's a lifelong issue. When someone is abused as a child, this is something that stays with them for life. So they have counseling services available to them. And then our recent sexual assault survivors. So these are individuals who have recently been assaulted. Those tend to, for us, come primarily from the university population, but not just. People in the community of all ages are sexually assaulted. But because we're a university town, we do tend to see that a significant number. And for them, we provide hospital accompaniment. So we go out and send a trained advocate, whether it's a staff or a trained volunteer, to be with them through that process of a sexual assault exam, which is long and can be very difficult. And so we're there to provide support for that person and be their point person. We're not working for law enforcement. We're not working for the DAs or the hospital. We're just there to be a source of support for that victim through that process. And then we also provide counseling services for those individuals as well. Within our non-residential program, we also serve children who have witnessed domestic violence. These are kids that are struggling with that family dynamic and are needing some therapeutic help to cope with what they've seen and what they've been exposed to on the daily basis. And then this past two, and now it's been 2 years, we also added a dating violence counselor. So she's focused on working with those dating violence individuals who are finding themselves in those early stages of abuse and hopefully changing that cycle for them through the therapeutic process. We also provide prevention education in local middle schools and high schools, where we work with young people on learning about healthy relationships, learning about sexual assault and consent issues, in the efforts, of course, of preventing future violence. That program is the only program where we focus on also abusive patterns of behavior. So we're not just working to prevent victimization, we're working to prevent perpetrator behavior. Lots of different things going on throughout the organization. Last year we served 2,111 individuals.
Wow.
Through our direct services with different victims of abuse. We provided over 12,000 presentations, 12,000 individuals through our community education and prevention education programming as well.
Wow, that's, mm-hmm. those are some pretty big numbers.
Yeah.
but I mean, that's, you know, who knows how much you guys have prevented just, or, you know, somebody's impacted, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Impacted those lives. And
you know, anytime, and one of the things that I do a lot is I do a lot of community education where I go and talk to different groups, Lions Club, Ladies Auxiliary, you know, I just went and spoke to a women's group that meets quarterly. And every time we talk to these individuals, it's not uncommon for a handful of them to have survived, they're survivors of one of our issue areas. And those who aren't often know people who are within their own circle, you know, family members, friends, you know, church members, people that are connected to them. So though we want to believe that this kind of thing doesn't happen here, unfortunately it does in every community we serve. As I've mentioned more than once that we surveyed in Caldwell County, that's a varied geographic area, right? Mm-hmm. So San Marcos has its own complexity and, you know, demographic. And then Kyle has their own, and Buda and Wimberley and Dripping Springs, Luling and Lockhart. So they all have their own identities of how they see themselves in their communities. And, you know, particularly in the smaller communities, this is a hard subject to still bring up and talk about because people are afraid to come forward. They don't want to be judged and blamed for what has happened to them.
Right.
So it's important as well to recognize, though our name is Hayes Caldwell Women's Center, that we serve women, men, and children, and anyone that identifies however they identify, right? One of the things we're trying to do is also reach out to the LGBTQ community and letting them know that this is a place for them as well. We're allies. We have staff who identify as well in the same community, and it's important that we encourage all members of our community to feel welcome and safe here.
Your name does include Women's Center. Mm-hmm. You know, you do reach out to those different communities, and you know, having a place to go mm-hmm. is so important. So
absolutely.
Thank you for that, and
yeah.
you know, thank you for, you know, spending some time with me today. Is
sure.
there anything else that you wanted to add before we wrap up today?
No, the only other thing is that, you know, we try to always, when we have an opportunity for messaging, is to let people know the different populations we serve. So I've mentioned that. The geographic area we serve, so I've mentioned that. But the other thing that I haven't mentioned is that everything that we do is free and confidential. So in no way does anyone need to feel a barrier coming in thinking that they can't afford it, or that we're going to make reports. With child abuse, it's required by law, of course, that children, when they're being abused, if they're suspected of abuse, that a report needs to be made. That's for anyone under the age of 18, right? But as adults, we have the choice to make a report or not. And so we are not calling anyone that individual doesn't want called. That is their decision, and we, again, our goal is to empower, educate, and provide options. That's what we do. And at the end of the day, it's their decision whether they stay or don't stay in the shelter. Often people come in for a little while and then they go back home because they're not ready. And that's their choice. We're not limiting the number of times they can come back and seek services. So we always want people to feel like they're the ones that are the drivers. And we're just here to give them tools and resources.
Thank you so much for your time, Melissa. And if people did want to reach out and decide
yes.
to utilize your resources, where can they find information?
Okay, so our 24-hour hotline is 512-396-HELP or 4357. We answer that 24/7, whether it's office staff during the day or our overnight staff or volunteers. We also have a website that we just revamped. It's www.hcwc.org. They can get information about the services that we provide, ways they can engage with us. If they're wanting to volunteer, donate, just help us spread awareness. even that alone is a really productive thing that people can do. And we also have an educational website called stopthehurt.org, and that is focused on educational resources. So there's a lot of information particularly geared to youth, but lots of great tools for parents or grandparents or teachers that want to learn more about these issues and ways that they can support young people.
Great. Well, that sounds like a lot of information for our listeners out there. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your time, Melissa. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for the work that you guys are doing over here.
Thank you. Appreciate you having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Windows into Wimberley. As always, we're here to discuss the things that are happening in and around your town. If there's something happening you'd like to know more about, or if you have topics or suggestions for the show, please contact KOWO General Manager Ryan Shue at 512-965-9969. Join Erica Clapp on KOWO 104.1 FM next time for another look inside the Windows into Wimberley.